we are holding on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We are on the last line of the middle size lines. Okay, we learned in the Mishnah that a king is allowed to have a maximum of 18 wives. So the question is, Hanit Shmoni Atzer Menolam? Where do we know that that 18 is a max? It's like this. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Vayivoldu la David bonim b'chevron." Says David had sons while he was still with Chevron, while he was king of only Shevet Yehuda the first 7.5 years of his reign. And they are as follows: Vayibachore Amnon Machinoyim Hayisraelis. His eldest son was Amnon, who was born to Achinoyim Hayisraelis. Umishneu Kilov. The second one was Kilov Avigail Eshes Nabal Akamli, who was born from Avigail, who had previously been the wife of Nabal, and afterwards David had married her after her husband had died. Vashlishi Avshalom Kilov. Vashlishi Avshalom ben Macha. The third one is Avshalom the son of Macha. Varvi Adoni ben Chagis. Vachamishi Shvatya ben Avital. Vashishi Yisraam LaEgla Eshes David. The sixth one was Yisraam, who was born to Egla, the wife of David. We'll see soon that Egla wasn't her real name, it's a nickname. We'll see soon as a nickname for Michal. And she's called Eshes David because she was his primary wife. She was the first one. He'd married them all at the same time. It was long before Chayim Jeb and Geshem. So, so the point is, therefore, so we see each of these six sons came from a different wife. So at that point, he had six wives. Ela Yuldul the David and Chevron. These are the six boys who were born to David and Chevron. Later on, years later, after the whole affair of Bathsheba, the Navi Nathan tells David, "Hayitochen, you felt you had to, you weren't satisfied with what you have already. You have to go and take Bathsheba." Imah, he says, it's not.
She was called Bathsheba. She was a seventh.
No. Cute, but no. Good, but no. Wait. Okay. Imas, the Navi says to him, if that's too little for you, then we can add to you kahena like these, the kahena, and then like these. So kahena means shis. The word kahena means an equal number to the ones you already have, which is six. V'kahena shis, and another v'kahena means another six. So there's your 18. That's your 8. Davel over 20 straight. So there's your 18. He's saying, kahena v'kahena. You can have as many as you already have now, and another time as many as you have now. So 6 and 6 and 6 is 18.
Who said that?
The Navi, nothing tells him. So therefore, we learn 18. Now, I mean.
Maybe it was just
that you're mad. No, but the king is a king. There's no reason that halacha should be any
different. You.
No, it's sifal achal, meaning for a king. Yeah.
And Shlomo, the Navi that was telling him was stuttering?
No. but wait, we're going to see soon. There's going to be different other opinions about kahena v'kahena might mean more than 18. But wait, well, the halacha is taka 18. But anyway. The real question is, I mean, at that point he has Bathsheba already. Isn't she at least number 7? So why don't we say 21 by that? So there are a couple of explanations. One of them is that yes, but the Navi is telling him, how you talking? He married Bathsheba. He's the one who's upgrading him for, so obviously she's not meant to be counted. Or we're talking about that, he had his original six wives, and then we're saying that if you want more later on, kahena v'kahena, fine.
But the
remez in the pasuk, yes. And as a matter of fact, yeah, because the remez is this kahena v'kahena. This whole thing that we just said. And as a matter, the Orach HaNer, in fact, points out. I mean, we learned in the Mishnah. We had an opinion in the Mishnah that the opinion of Reb Shimon the opinion of Reb Yehuda rather that you're allowed to have more than 18 if they're not mysterious as libra, if they're not women who are going to be turning away your heart from the Mishnah. Obviously, David's wives were not like that. So according to Reb Yehuda, he ought to have been known. David's not going to marry a Rishah. He's going to marry it. He's going to marry almost 20. So obviously, therefore, it's only a hint. Because then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, at least, yeah, in principle, David could have had more than 18. Maskis la Ravina. So Ravina asks, how do you know that kahena v'kahena means only 18? Ema kahena tauti stray. Maybe the first kahena means fine, you're going from 6 to 12. V'kahena means esrin v'arba. Maybe the v'kahena means, and then an equal amount to all those we have so far. So from 6 to 12, and from 12 to 24. So maybe it means 24. Tani nami hachir. In fact, we learn a brayser that says just that. Lo yabel enoshim yosim esrim v'arba. There's an opinion in a brayser that says that the maximum is 24. And l'man d'dorish vav. And not only that, we have an opinion of tanoim that says that in some places that we darshin a vav. We're actually going to have it later on in the mesecta. We're going to actually bring it that we're going to have later on in the mesecta. We're going to have the opinion of Reb Akiva who says that you can darshin a vav also to teach us something extra. So then, according to that, avoy mishmona. Then you could have 48. Kohena. No, no, no. In other words, you have, he starts out with 6. Kohena makes it 12. Zeh makes it now 24. Kohena makes it equivalent to all the above, so therefore 48. Indeed, we learn in a Braisa, lo yabla noshim yosim avoyim rishmona. There is such an opinion that a king can have up to 48 wives. Okay, so the question is, a tani dan mai tani. We're not saying they would have necessarily, but they're allowed. We're going to learn on Omid Beis. He thought these dinim didn't apply to him, as we'll talk about. He was wrong in that, but anyway. He didn't have 3,000, by the way. 300 wives and 700 concubines. Anyway, wait. So the question is, yeah. So the question is, the Tana of our Mishnah, why did he say only 18? Why didn't he hold like any of the other opinions that it's 24 or 48? Yes, but on the other hand, the Tana of our Mishnah says we're making a hekesh between the second Kohena and the first one. Ma Kohena Kamashit, the first Kohena definitely, according to everybody, comes to only include 6 more women. Kohena Basra Shit, so the same way the second Kohena also has to be to include only 6 more, not 12 more, not 24 more, nothing like that. Kohena means like these, because he started out with 6. We listed 6 wives of his in Chevron. Okay, so the question is, we listed all of David's wives, his original wives before. What about Michal? We learned the other day the whole story of him, yeah. The answer is Amar Rav Eglah Zu Michal. The name Eglah, the last one where it says over there that Yisra'el was born to Eglah, the wife of David, Eglah is Michal. Lama Nikra Shema Eglah. Why is she called Eglah? Shachaviva Olav Ke Eglah, because she's as dear to David as like a baby calf. V'cheinu Omer, and thus you find another place in Tanakh where you find that a person's wife is compared to an Eglah. Shimshon says to the Plishtim, after we know the whole story where by his first marriage where Shimshon asks the riddle for the Plishtim, and then if you don't answer within a certain amount of time, then you're all going to have to give me suits and blankets and whatnot. And eventually they womb the secret out of his wife. And he tells them, Lulich harash to beglos, if you haven't plowed with my calf, you wouldn't have found out my secret. So we see over there also that a calf is a metaphor for a wife, favorite wife. So therefore here also Eglah means Michal.
That name doesn't go so well today.
Yeah,
well, okay. Did you ever try to say your wife Eglah? What?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. The question is, we have a Michal Bani. Are you telling me that Michal had children? But you find a positive, so you have yet another story with Michal. The beginning of the story is in the Haftarah of Parshas Shemini. The rest of it, it's not all minute to say, but the gist of it is when David is bringing the Oren to Yerushalayim, we all know the famous story, dancing and leaping and singing over there in public. And Michal looked out the window and thought, it's undignified. How are you talking? A king should act that way in public. So when he comes home, she gives it to him. How are you talking?
That's why he married.
What?
She should give it to him.
No, come on. yeah. So she, I talk, and my father's family never would have acted like that in public. And David, her family was Shaul's family. Yeah. And he tells her, Adarab, that was the problem with your father's family. They put their own covered ahead of the Edishtim. I understand that a king, yes, he has to respect his own covered, but the covered of the Edishtim is greater. And the Pasuk finishes off, Ulamicha Bastro, Lahoyala Vola, the Adyay Moisa. The Pasuk finishes off that Micha Bastro did not have any children until the day she died. So what? Because of that, so then in that case, what are you telling me? That they had a son Yisrael? The answer is, Amar Abchista, Adyay Moisa, Lahoyala, Vyay Moisa, Hoyala. Yes, but what the Pasuk means, she never had while she was alive, but she did end up giving birth to a child, and then she died in childbirth.
That's why she died?
No, well, in other words, this is all part of, as I was going to say in the next line, that this is she got punished in Olam Hazeh. This way she doesn't have to get in Olam Hazeh.
I don't want to get punished.
I don't know. History doesn't record that detail. But, yeah.
Have enough to have children.
Yeah, so the question is, though, still that doesn't work chronologically. Mechti bonim hecha kachosha lo bechevron. Where these 6 children that we listed before, Amnon and Kilov and the rest of them, we said were born while David was in Chevron. But this story with Michal and with David bringing the Oren happened in Yerushalayim. Which is later on, after David was ruled over all 12 Shvatim and made his capital in Yerushalayim.
He had all these other children before?
That's what we're saying. He had 6 children while he was living in Hebron. Each one from a different wife. From a different wife. And then afterwards they moved to Yerushalayim. So what are you telling me, that Michal never had any children throughout all the years she was married to David, and then on her deathbed she had him, and then she had one child and died in childbirth, and that child is Yisra'am, but Yisra'am is listed as having been born in Chevron. Chevron is before Yerushalayim, and this whole story happened in Yerushalayim. The pasuk says Micha Basro looked out the window. She saw David dancing and careening about in front of Hashem. And she mocked him in her heart. Afterwards she gave it to him. But before we're talking about just she saw him out the window and already she thought badly. What?
She, not in public.
No. When he came home, and she gave it to him. Michal got her punishment in Elam Hazah. Yes, she was on a higher level. She's expected to control her thoughts and to realize that it's not a bazillion, and therefore, yeah. So the point is, in other words, again, that the point is, again, you can't say that the one child that she had was before she died, because that would have been long after they were in Hebron. Mm-hmm. And we're saying that he had these children with her, he had this child with her in Hebron. Ella, no, we have to say it like this. Emma, you have to say it like this. Ad oisem ma'isahoyava, up until that point, she had a child, maybe she had this Yisra'am, and maybe other children as well. What happened was, means after that, she did not have any more children. And it could even mean, maybe it could have ignited, it can also mean that this Yisra'am died at some point, I don't know. But whatever it was, she didn't have any children after that. We could combine the two opinions together. You know, also, she may have had the one child in separate. David?
Yeah.
And he had other wives, but you're talking about if the child
because
died?
He loved her so much.
Yeah, okay.
So,
maybe, but okay, but it's more of a punishment for a woman.
Moshe loved Miriam.
Yeah, I mean, a woman feels it more keenly when she's childless, especially David had other wives. She doesn't have another husband.
Okay.
Fine. You want to ask, so you're telling me David only had six wives? But the pasuk says, "Vayikach David oid kilagshim and nashim Yerushalayim." It says that David married more kilagshim and more wives in Yerushalayim. So by the time Nathan is coming to tell him and to tell him off for the story of Bathsheba, he has a lot more than six. The answer is fine. L'maluyah shmona also. Those are to fill up the 18. He only had six when he came to Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, he married another 12 between kilagshim and Gwen.
Kilagshim. He had goyish of kilagshim.
No.
Because remember the kids.
Oh, you fast toya. We're going to say that in a few lines. But hold on. That's a different thing. That's your fast toya.
Okay.
What? That was before Mount Torah. That was 400 years. 400 years. That's Mount Torah. Yeah. Okay. So you have Mamalu Yishmael also to fill up the number of 18. There is, by the way, here all Gemara is saying that the Pilagshim and the wives are all included in the total of 18. But I think the Yerushalmi maybe brings up the possibility that maybe it only includes wives, not it only includes wives, not Pilagshim. And in fact, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, you have a pasuk that mentioned in connection with Rechavam, the grandson of David, the pasuk says he had 18 wives and 60 Pilagshim. So the pashtus, why did he have 18 wives? Because the pasuk says he can only have 18. He may have held, according to the opinion, that the six of the Pilagshim are not included. Okay, but all Gemara is not going.
The question was made on the time of David.
That wasn't there. It's
Moshe Mitzina.
So the question is, my noshim, my pilagshim. What is the difference between wives and pilagshim? The difference is like this. Wives means they're full-fledged wives. There's a ksuba, there's kiddushin. Pilagshim below ksuba or below kiddushin. Pilagshim, there's no ksuba and there's no kiddushin. Meaning they're designated to live with the king, but there are different gersois among the rishonim. The Rambam talks about the idea that a pilagish was mutter before Matan Torah, but afterward not, except for kings. And some of the Noisa Kalim, the Ravid argues with the Rambam on that. The Ravid says that why should it be also after Matan Torah? Some of the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam say that Rambam may have had the Girsa in our Gemara that Pilagshim have Kiddushin, they just don't have a Ksuba. So fine, there is the Kiyikach Ishisha. Therefore, the Rambam would say it's still mutter to a king. The Ravid would say it's mutter to everybody, not just kings. To have no Ksuba and no Kiddushin, not. But it's not so simple, because in Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam says more clearly that Pilagshim are below Ksuba, below Kiddushin, same as we have in our Gemara over here. So there's a few different possibilities. There might be different types of Kiddushin.
I think that the Rosh says that one of the reasons why one couldn't have a Pilagish today is because she wouldn't go to the mikveh, which would mean that, all things aside, You would really maybe a little.
So the truly Rabbi Yaakov Emden, speaking of him also, he writes in one of his Trovas that given circumstances nowadays where the people who are going to be living in sin anyway, he would be prepared to be master of the concept of a pilagesh to avoid more serious averus. And they go to the mikveh and all accept. He says, "Lamaisa, since in Shulchan Aruch and the Noitz Kalim on Shulchan Aruch they don't allow it, then he doesn't. You know, he says if there are two other rabbanim of his times who would be master it, then he'd do it."
I ask you a question. If you like it, she has a relationship with someone else.
It would be no. Yeah, it would be
no.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I'm sorry, if
a man were to have a pilagish, he and her are supposed to be having an exclusive relationship, right, and she goes and has relations with somebody else, yeah, back to the
same.
So there is, so again, there has, not necessarily, so, but there has to be some form of kedushin. When we say here, beloy kedushin, we don't necessarily mean no kedushin at all. It may be. I mean, remember, kedushin be are also kedushin. If they make it, they're going to be exclusive to each other, then she's going to be exclusive to him, and that could constitute kedushin of bia, as opposed to kedushin of kesef. Okay. I'm going to be hold to Amarad. Here's what we're getting to that you just mentioned now, Aaron. Alba meis yiladim ha'yilo leDavid. David had 400 children. V'cholam v'nei yifat toyar ha'yu. All of them were children of yifat toyar. Now, do we mean that these are yifat toyar? Yifat Toyer is what it describes in Parshas Kisei, that when you go to war and you capture captives over there, if among the captives is a woman who you take a fancy to, then you're allowed to take her as a wife, and you're allowed to. It's actually the Chloikas Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos has some discussion over here that Rashi in Kedushin, where we learned about the dinim of it, Rashi holds over there that you're not allowed to have relations with her at all before you Megaya her. Tosfos acts actually on the basis of the next piece of Gemara over here that it seems that not. It seems you're allowed one via with her while she's still a goita, and then afterwards, if you want to continue being with her, then you need to be Megaya. What? Because he did give her Torah, like maybe the Yetzirah. Torah is only giving you the whole thing, because otherwise your Yetzirah is going to be out of control. So like this, Torah puts limits on it.
It certainly makes sense that way, because if you connect the Yetzirah, then, you know, what good is taking her to
your
house?
Rashi might answer the fact is, you have pasta salo, you know that in a few
months
you'll be, whatever. Nice. Okay, anyway, but based on the next piece, on the next piece of Gemara after this one, is what Tosfos asked.
But the meaning is you're allowed to convert a woman to marry her.
Usually you're not, but this is an exception. This is an exception that you're allowed to. You capture her in war, and if she agrees to convert, then yes, you're allowed to. It's not the best thing. One of the ones we mentioned before, one of David's wives was Maacha, and Avshalom was her son. And in fact, we find, I think we have later in the Masechta, that Avshalom was almost the prototype of a Ben Sora to murder, and we learn that from the fact, because the Torah mentions after the Yifat Toya, after the Yifat Toya, it talks about the case where a man has a wife and he hates her, and then it talks about Ben Sora to murder, so there's a connection. Rashi mentions that on the circle of it. So it's not the best thing to do. But
she was, actually.
So Macha, was the Yifat Toya. But here we're saying there were others. So do we mean, by the way, that these 400 children are all actually David's own children? That would mean even 400 different wars he captured Yifat Toya. Some
400 wars, it's the one war and you captured 500.
No, because the din is you only allowed one per war.
Right? I knew that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's no difference. Yeah, so king is, Anyway, so some proportion would say, yes, it means exactly that. On the other hand, Rashi in Kedushin, this Gemara is also brought in Kedushin, Rashi over there says, doesn't mean these 400 children are actually dubbed as biological children. It means they're children or young men or whatever that he had along in his army that were fathered from Yifat Toya by his various soldiers. Anyway. So he had 400. V'cholim b'nei Yifat Toya ha'yu. They were all children of Yifat Toya. U'megadli glorious ha'yu. They all wore their hair long, like in goyish style, like a chuk. Because halacha is actually the child of Yifat Toya is goes after his mother. His mother is a goita at that point, at least according to Tosfos, that you're allowed to be a Rishona. That's one of Tosfos' proofs that you're allowed it. And therefore, that you're allowed one beer with her during wartime before she's in the
guy. How would he have the kid?
Because otherwise, the kids are going to be goita. I'm going to be goyim, So if they're goyim, they're allowed to wear blurtis,
Sure, you could get one.
Is it, So if the kid can convert, or the mother can convert the kid, like, as we know, the usual kind of thing.
He didn't want them to convert.
But when they went to war, these 400 boys or young men or whatever would all sit in golden chariots. They would go at the head of the army. They are the tough guys, powerful guys, the base David, meaning they were there like in order to scare off the goyim that he's fighting against. Part of the idea was, since they're children of Yifas Toyar, the goyim around would realize, hey, you know what? We and the other nations around have come up against these guys before, and every time we got beaten. And look, these guys are children of women who were captured from us. So that itself would scare them off.
The wives and children of themselves are going to fight them.
They're not necessarily going to fight them, whatever, but even just that they come along and they're chosen. By the way, though, this that we're saying 400, by the way, Reb Reuven Margolius has an interesting fact by it. He says if you look in Divya Yomin, it lists David's children, so it lists a bunch of them, the same list that we had before with their mothers, and then it lists 9 of them without mentioning their mothers. He says maybe those are the ones we're talking about over here. So they're all children of Yifas Toyar, therefore the Pasuk didn't bother mentioning their mothers' names because their mothers remain goyim anyway. He says, what about, we say over here, 400? He says, an interesting idea. He says maybe the original copy of the original handwritten copy of the Gemara, a person wrote tough over there, meaning to stand for the word Tisha, and later on they misunderstood tough as meaning 400.
If they had a chance to be a...
After the Beardish Rhino, the kid is a guy. Yeah, we're going to see that in the next season now. Yeah.
The Omer
of Yehuda Amara. Tomer Bas Yifas Toyar. Tomer, the daughter of David, was a child of Yifas Toyar. So let's run down the story of Amnon and Tomer real quick. We're going to go through some details of it now in the Gemara. The story in brief is Amnon, again, we said, was David's firstborn. He started having a taiva towards Tamar, who was, as the Gemara is saying over here, was the daughter of Yifas Toyar. Even though biologically she's David's daughter, therefore her mother was a goita when she was conceived, and therefore she's not considered David's daughter. She's a geyota, it's fine, but she's not considered related la'alacha to Amnon. Anyway, Amnon started having a desire for her. So his friend Yonadav, who was actually a cousin of his, one of David's nephews, advises him, pretend like you're sick. Ask her to be mevakachayla. Ask her to come prepare some food for you. And then once you have her in the house, then the Malbim actually makes Yonadav to be not quite so bad, not quite such a horrible guy. He says that Yonadav figured if you have Tamar around, at least if you have her one on one, that maybe will help cool you off. That maybe will help cool your jet. But it was the other way. Yeah. Anyway.
That's before they had the use of
them. Yeah, we're gonna say it. Anyway. So she comes, she prepares them the food, he sends out all the servants, and then once they're alone, he violates her. So she, anyway, afterwards then, as the Pasuk says, he hated her viciously, and then sent her away. We'll see soon in the Gemara. But this is the famous thing we say in Pirkei Avos, this coming Shabbos is Pirkei Avos, that kol ava she kluya b'dover, if you have a love that depends on something, bottle dover, once the thing is gone, kela ava, and the classic example is Amnon b'tamar. Anyway, so she makes a whole to-do about it, of course, you know, and her brother Avshalom, who was also the son of Maacah, so he is her biological full brother, he was furious about it. The upshot is Amnon raped her, yeah. So a couple of years later, he finds his opportunity and he kills Amnon. That's the story in brief. Now we're going to get into some details of it. So, Tamar was the daughter of Yifas Toyar. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, right before during this whole episode, when Amnon is grabbing her and then about to rape her, and she says to him, "Va'asa dabana ala melech." Now, instead of doing that, speak to the king, Kilo Yimna Eni Mimeka. He won't prevent me from marrying you. Why should you do it in a way of Isser by raping me? Do it in a way that's Heter, and then you'll marry me.
What do we need for the king's permission? She's developing.
Fine, but still, you know, it's Derech Eretz that you're going to ask the king to. So the question is, if she was from an actual marriage of David, then how would it be? Even if they're from different mothers, they still have the same father. It's still Arayas, the brother and sister. So therefore, you must say she was the daughter of Yifas Toyar. So here is also, therefore, that this is what Tosfos is discussing, that you have to say there must be allowed Bia Rishona while the woman is still a goita. Otherwise, Tamar is only conceived after her mother is already disgaired, then she is David's daughter.
Amnon.
She's David's daughter, la la. Yeah, and therefore I'm not sister, la la.
Yeah. Who
says there was beer shown from Macha? She was a goiter. She may have been from Skila before. We don't know. History doesn't record. Oh, you're talking about Tama? Tama didn't say Tama became pregnant. And besides, yeah, okay. All right, so now let's get into some.
Her mother?
Yeah, her mother wasn't necessarily beer shown up. Yeah. Okay. Pasuk says, well, Amnon Reyo. Tama's mother, yeah, nah. Well, Amnon Reyo Shmo Yonadav ben Shima Achi David. The pasuk says that Amnon had a friend whose name was Yonadav, the son of Shima, the brother of David. So he's Amnon's cousin. V'hoya, Yonadav actually ish chacham b'goyim. It says Yonadav was a wise man. What kind of wise man? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav ish chacham l'rusha. It means he was wise to do bad. Not wise in the positive sense, but wise in that he had the idea.
Guy.
He was a wise guy. Yeah, but even yeah. Okay. Then the pasuk says, so running down the story, so one day Yonadav says to Amnon, Maduat Kochab Dal Ben HaMelech, why do you look so weak and thin and whatever? What's the matter? And then Amnon tells him that I have the hots for Tamar. So Yonadav tells him, lie in bed, pretend to be sick. And he tells him, ask that Tamar should come visit you and prepare you some food. Sure enough, she came, she took a pan, and she poured out the food in front of him. What did she make for him? She made him some kind of fried food, like latkes or something. The pasuk actually uses the word levivos, which in modern Hebrew, levivos means latkes. But there wasn't necessarily latkes, especially they didn't have potatoes in those days, but some like pancakes or something. Okay.
They could have done it some buckwheat.
Yeah, okay. All right. Later on, after he violated her, the pasuk says, Amnon sinag doylamoy. It says, Amnon hated her with a tremendous hate. My timer, what happened?
Wow.
All of a sudden? Because a hair got tied around his aver and made him a krus shafa, cut off the end of his aver. The question is, okay, if it accidentally got tied around, then why did he hate her so much? Not that it was her fault. No, she deliberately tied it and caused him to be a cruel shrapa. The Orochoner actually asked, why would she do such a thing? I mean, fine, she wants to get back at him, fine, but okay, why ask her that way? He says an interesting idea, because like this, was finding in the Pesukim afterwards that Amnon says, I don't want to forget about it, get out of here, I don't want you anymore. She figured she's going to force the issue. Like this, a cruel shrapa is not allowed to marry a born Jewish woman. Like this, he would say, if he was still intact, I don't need you. Let me go marry one of the other. Let me go marry a born Jewish woman, as befits a king's son, the king's eldest son. As opposed to, if he's a cruel shrapa, he can only marry Yodas or Mamzeris or what have you. Fine. Then she figures, then she can force him into that he's going to talk after marry her, like he should talk after having after having done the stir. Anyway, so therefore that's why he did. The question is any. So what do you mean? What hair? But Gorosh Rava, what we find that Rava Darshan. What does it mean, a pasuk in Yechezkel, you had a famous name among the nations for your beauty. What particular beauty did the Jewish people have that was so famous? It means that Jewish women did not have underarm hair or pubic hair. And that was a beautiful thing. Rashi points out, by the way, this is Kodim Shekotu. Nowadays, we know where Jewish women have the same body hair as anybody else. So Marshall talks about that maybe there was a little bit of it to be fine. I mean, state diaries are a simon of maturity in halacha. So there had to be something, but like maybe a very little bit of it. Maybe very little bit of it. Marshall says maybe it means they shave. Whatever the case, Rashi seems to learn that it means whether it naturally grows, because Rashi brings from a pasuk from Yeshaya that later on, after the Jewish people sinned, then Takeh the Eibush made it that Jewish women grow hair in the same normal places as everybody. Anyway. So the question is, how is there any hair for there to do this? The answer is, Shiny Tomer, Debas Yifas Toyar. But again, Tomer is different. She's the daughter of Yifas Toyar. So therefore, she didn't have the same genetics. Genetically, she's half, her mother is a goy, descended from goy, and therefore, yeah. Next, the pasuk says, "Vatikach Tamar Efer Adar." So the pasuk says, after this happened, Tamar put ashes and put them on her head. The ksonis apasim asher aleha kara, and she took the ksonis apasim, the fancy the striped or woolen or whatever embroidered garment that she had on her, she ripped. So she made a big public thing out of it. Tanam, we learn a bright Tanam, Shmeda, Rabbi Shulam Karcha. We learn a bright in the name of Rabbi Shulam Karcha. Gedr Godol, Godra Tama Baris Hashah. By doing that, Tamar made, through her crying and her screaming and making a bizoyan of herself, she caused there to be a tremendous gedr that was created by that. A tremendous fence around halacha, a fence around the Naveda for the future. Omru, because people said to themselves, Libnois Malachim Tach, if such a thing could happen even to a princess, Libnois said Yotas Alachas Kamavakama, how much more so that a commoner girl could end up getting taken advantage of that. Imu Tsnuis Tach, a girl who was usually Tsniasik, and then she was. The prophet starts by saying that the Amnon couldn't do anything to her, and now she says, because she always kept herself, she kept to the women's side of the palace, as Pacha should be. And then therefore Amnon had to do this whole stratagem to get her. So the Tznuas Kach, who Kruptas Alach Kama Kama, how much some more so that there's the danger of this happening to women who are not quite so sneezed. So therefore, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, Ba'oysa Shah Gozru, at that time, the Sanhedrin made a Gzera, Ala Yichud Ba'ala Pnuya. They made a Gzera that you're not allowed to do Eishas Ish, that you're not allowed to do Yichud with an Eishas Ish, and you're not allowed to do Yichud with a Pnuya, with an unmarried woman. So this way, there will never be such a situation again that an unmarried girl like Tama will be alone with an unmarried, with a guy like Amar. The question is, what do you mean? Yichud daraisa. The concept of yichud is daraisa. We learned in Kiddushin. Da'amar of Yishif, da'amar of Yechon, and Mishum of Shimon, and Yehi Tzadek. Remez li yichud min ha-Torah minayin. Where is there a remez in the Torah for the concept of yichud? Shenema, the Pasuk says, ki yisischa achicha ben imecha. The Pasuk says, if your brother, the son of your mother, tries to talk you into Avodah Zarah. Question is, ben a mesis ben a ben a mesis. What, would only a brother from your mother's side be likely to be mesis to you, and a brother from your father's side would not? Ela loy malach. No, the pasuk is also telling you a different din in this connection, telling you ben misyachadim imay by saying ben imecha, a son of your mother, by putting those together implies a son is allowed to be in yichud with his mother. The ein acha misyachadim kol arayis shabatara. But there's no other except, well, a father and a daughter also the same idea. But the point is, other than that, you're not allowed to be in yichud with anyone, with any woman who would be also to you as an erva. And Eishas Ish is an erva to everybody except her husband. Therefore, yichud with her is also even before David's time. Ela emer gozru al yichud dipnuya. No, not yichud, not ala yichud ba'ala pnuya. Two separate things, but they made it clear from now on there is no yichud with a pnuya.
What's the difference?
The difference is that a pnuya is not also to you, minatera. You could do kedusha biya for that matter, but. After this story of Tamar and Amnon, they made it clear from now on there's no yichud between an unmarried girl and a man.
She was more upset that she didn't continue marrying her.
Well, there is that too, yeah. She says to him afterward that at least you've done such a terrible thing, at least make something of it and marry me.
Well, when did she put it on her ashes?
Afterwards, when he threw her out. Yeah.
Honestly,
that's the point. So she, well, I mean, Hugh, there weren't Edim, there weren't whatever, but and besides that, also not, yeah, okay. I mean, she was a Gioris anyway. The dinim of onus and the fata don't necessarily apply to a Gioris. No, because it applies to a Bsula, and a Gioris is not necessarily a Bsula. But okay, anyway.
Not a
Bsula. Yeah, she may have. Yeah. Anyway,
the woman in that case, is she obligated to publicize it, or can she keep quiet?
She could have done, but at least like this, we're saying by publicizing it, she created a gedor gadol. Like this, they understood how severe it is, how much of a danger of it is, and they made this gedor against Yehuda. Okay. Now we'll move on to talking briefly about another one of David's sons.
The disincentive or
what? What?
The Gedor Gadol.
The Gedor Gadol, like this, we're making a Zera that from now on, Yichud Pnuya is also. This way, there will never be such a possibility again. In the future, if Amnon is sick and says, I want Tamar to come make me some food, we'll have to have somebody else there in the room. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we're going to talk briefly about another one of David's sons. We mentioned before David's six eldest sons. We had there was Amnon. The second one was Avshalom. The second one was Kilov. The third one was Avshalom, and the fourth one was Adoniyahu. We find at the beginning of Sefer Melachim that Adoniyahu, when David was very old and cold, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, that he tried to make himself king. He got together a group of supporters of Sassarda Partis Chayasara. He got together a group of supporters, and he tried to have himself anointed as king. The Pasuk says, V'adoni ben Chagis misnase lemer ani emlech. He was trying to raise himself up to say, I will be king. Well, what does that mean? It sounds like he tried to, but it failed. Now, in the end, Attacker did fail, but not for other reasons, because David found out about it and had Shlomo anointed. But it sounds like, to begin with, he wasn't able to do it. He's only misnafe. He's only priding himself, I'm going to reign, but it's not going. Why not? What we learn from this is he tried to make the crown fit, but it wouldn't fit. So Rashi mentioned the famous thing that David's crown, which actually originally, the Gemara mentioned in Avodah Zarah, this crown actually originally came from an idol in Bnei Amon. They had to be Mavakal, they had to have a guy named Itay Agiti, who was a goy, a friend of David, to be Mavakal, so that way they could use it for Jewish purposes, otherwise it would have to be destroyed. Anyway. But then you move after, let you say, we're not using it for Avodah Zarah anymore. We'll learn the details about it in the Sefer Avodah Zarah in a few months, Beis Hashem. Anyway, this crown had a bar running across the middle of it. So only if your head had a groove in the middle of it, your head would have to be shaped like this, and then it would fit. Otherwise, not.
David,
it fit. But the point is, whoever is Rory Lamalchus, the crown would fit him. Whoever not. So Adonai Yahu is trying to make it fit, and it wouldn't fit because he didn't have that shaped head.
I thought the actual bar would move.
Maybe,
the right person.
Rashi just says, only the person who has a groove in his head that would fit the bar.
That was from Goliath?
No, not from Goliath, from Bnei Amon. Oh, why do you have a groove in his head? I don't know. No, because that wouldn't be hereditary. No, it was a natural thing. I don't know. I haven't heard what you say.
I have a groove
around, but I don't know. Anyway, okay. The pasuk says it also about Adonai Yahu. The pasuk continues, "Vayasla rechav uparoshim." It says he made for himself a chariot and horsemen, v'chamishim ishrotim lefanim. He had 50 men running in front of him. The question is, "Ma'ir rabusa?" Big deal. Only 50 men. So what's the gdula in that? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, because these were 50 special men. Kulin the Tulei Tchil, all of them, by the way, yeah, this whole Gemara is in Avodah Zarah, for that reason, because it talks about the crown over there. So all of these men were in the Tulei Tchil, they all had their spleens removed, so that there's less to weigh them down. The spleen, it has a function in the body, it just gets rid of old red blood cells, but it can be removed without harming the person. And like this, for example, it makes the person lighter, it makes him lighter on his feet. They had the bottoms of their feet hollowed out. This way, it actually says they could run. They could run over thorns or over thorny ground or rough ground or whatever without their feet getting injured. I don't know. It could have been done by Jewish doctors. Could have been. No, Adonai Yahu had been done. He hired doctors for the purpose, I guess.
Rashi said it was going to be stopped, so it wasn't certain.
I did not. Oh, so okay, it wasn't surgery. They did have surgery in those days, but yeah, it was usually the surgery was usually more dangerous than the disease. That's true. But yeah, here they used Sam. Rashi says that's true. Rashi says that they used some kind of chemical to dissolve the soles of their feet. So that's yeah. I don't know.
If you want to run fast, and I get shoes, why have to go?
I don't know.
Because then if
a lace on their shoe breaks while they're running, then they have to stop. So okay, all right.
So.
Let's go. The Mishnah says, more dinim about a king. We say that the pasuk says a king is not allowed to have too many horses. So how many is he allowed to have? Only as many as are needed for his chariot. The pasuk says, we'll explain in the Gemara what that means. The kesef is of lo yad v'lo ma'od. The pasuk continues that he should not have too much gold and silver. So how much is he allowed? Elakadeh litin aspanya. He's allowed to have enough to be able to pay to be able to pay his soldiers. He pays them on an annual basis. He's allowed to have enough to be able to pay them their wages for the next year. Because of the Sefer Torah Lishmoy, a king has to write a Sefer Torah for his own name. Meaning, as the Rambam says, every year he has a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. A king has to have a special Sefer Torah of his own. He has to have it written of his own. Yotzel Mochama, so when he goes out to war, he brings the Sefer Torah along with him. Nichnas, when he comes back from war, who machnisei? He brings back the Sefer Torah with him. Yosha Bedin, if he's sitting and judging, then the Sefer Torah still has to be with him. Mesev, he's reclining to eat, he knegdo, then the Sefer Torah has to be opposite him. Next to him. Shenema, v'hoisei, imay, as the Pasuk says, it should be with him. V'koraboy, koy mechayev, and he should read it throughout his life. We'll see at the bottom of the Amud that basically he has to have it with him all the time. We'll have a piece of the Gemara over there that says that he would have a small sefer Torah that would be hanging from his arm, so like a tamer. This way, he literally has it with him all the time, except like when he's going to the bathroom or bathhouse or whatever.
So
there are Rishonim who say that maybe for example, Rav Nachshon Gaon, actually one of the Gaonim, says that maybe it wasn't necessarily a full Sefer Torah. Maybe it was just a list of the mitzvahs. Maybe it was just the Aseret Hadibros. Maybe it was some other summary of the Torah or whatever it was. Yeah. Okay. Right. Says, turn it up on. When the post one says Layaival system, when it says you should not have too many horses, Yochal, if you look at Demer Kapter Pardosha. Maybe that means the king is not even allowed to have as many horses as he would need to pull his chariot and for his army chariot. No. And for his horsemen. No, Talmud Lomar Loi. No, therefore the Pasuk says that he can't have horses for him. Meaning, it can't just be, as in those times, having horses was like nowadays having Cadillacs or Rolls Royces or whatever. So you're not just having them in order to show off your wealth and your power or whatever. Loya in a marva, he can't have a lot of them for that. He can't have them for that purpose. Have a marva who can risk their production, but he can have them for practical purposes, to be able to pull his chariot, for his horsemen in war, whatever. Hamani Makayim Susim. So why does the Pasuk say that he should not have Susim? That means Susim of Aplonin. That means he's not allowed to have horses that are not actually being used for anything. Minayin Shafilo Sus Echad Robato Shrubla Yagra. How do we know, Taka, that if he has even one extra horse which he's not actually using, that he's over on this mitzvah of La Yagra? Therefore, the Pasuk doesn't just say susim. The next Pasuk says that he shouldn't, or the same Pasuk says he shouldn't have too many. Laman have a sus, to have a lot of sus. Now, sus, on the face of it, is a collective noun.
Right.
But because it says sus rather than sus, it means even one. So the question is, if you're saying even one unused one, he's already over on the mitzvah. Susim lomali, taka, why do we need the Pasuk to say susim in the plural?
Right.
The answer is lava loisah, dalko sus for sus. That teaches us taka that he's over on a separate loisah for every extra horse that he has. Every time he has an extra horse, you shouldn't just say he's over once and then that's it. There's no extra. No, every time he's over on the loisah again. Doesn't necessarily mean, by the way, that he gets malchus for every single one, but yeah.
So Lashon Bukhlas said it away.
That's true.
And Yachid will be punished, and a king will be punished by him.
Yeah. Because first of all, the Torah gives us a reason why not to have horses. V'lo yoshev us on Mitzrayim. You don't return the people to Mitzrayim because Mitzrayim in those days was the world center of horses. So it was like for fancy car, like Japan nowadays for fancy cars, yeah. So the point is, a commoner is not going to be able to do that. He's not going to be able to get the whole people to go to Mitzrayim to be his agents for horses. Mashem can a king would. And in fact, the Pasuk says, as we're going to see soon, that Shlomo Taka had a lot of horses. He was Taka over on this mitzvah. And the Pasuk Taka says that he wound up, there was a whole pool of people over there in Mitzrayim who were his agents for buying and selling horses. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, time of the cause of Rahman Allah. Fine, what are we saying that we're saying he's not allowed to have any extra horses because the Pasuk says loy. So what? If it didn't say the word loy, you would think he's not allowed to have enough horses to pull his chariot and for his war. So what's he supposed to use then? The answer is loy. No, but the point is, by adding the word loy, means it's not just that he's allowed to have exactly as much as he needs for his horses, for his chariots and whatever. He's allowed to have enough to have a generous amount, like enough to have spares. Rashi brings another gear, so not la pushi, but la puchi. You need sometimes to give the horse a break, so therefore you need spares for that purpose. So that kind of thing you're allowed to have. It's time to have a horse, to be able to show off, look, I have a horse, that not. They all have to be serving some kind of function at one time or another. Then the Mishnah said, "V'kesef azov la'yagaloy." You should not have too much gold and silver. Elikadei litna spanya, just enough to be able to pay his soldiers and his expenses. Tanan abanan. So we learn a similar brisa. V'kesef, and we're going to have a similar discussion. V'kesef azov la'yagaloy. The pasuk says he should not increase for himself a lot of gold and silver. Again, yochol afilu kadei litna spanya. Maybe it means he's not even allowed to have enough on hand for spanya. Again, therefore, the pasuk is for him to aggrandize himself, to make himself be a big person. So it means he's allowed to have enough gold and silver to be able to pay Aspanya. Again, you have to, and if he has any more than that, for example, what Amnon says, he can give it to the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash, let's say. In fact, we find that all the kings, all the righteous kings, a year, he said.
12 months.
12 months. 13 in Ibra Yargas, that we learned in the first paragraph, that a king is not allowed to be on the tribunal for an Ibra Shana, because he may want to have an Ibra Yar or not to have an Ibra Yar, depending on how it affects his expenses, and how it affects his expenses. Anyway, so he can donate the extra to the Beis Mikdash, for example, to him in various places. Mentioned that the kings of Yehuda, and even before that, Shaul, for example, regularly donated money to be for the treasury of the Mishkan and later the Beis Mikdash. So, yeah.
So he cannot collect more taxes than he needs.
Yeah.
Just the amount of gold.
Okay. So again, the question is, time of dakat of Rahman Loi. So what are you saying? And if only because the pasuk says Loi, is he allowed to have that? Holav hachi nami Loi. Otherwise, you would think he can't even have enough. How is he supposed to run his kingdom if he can't pay his soldiers? And again, the answer is like Tzricha La'arvacha. We're not saying he has to have exactly enough to the dollar. He needs to he can have extra. He can have a little. He can have a little bit extra. Let's say, for example, that if he needs to hire extra soldiers, if he finds that his army is not enough, and he has to hire some mercenaries or whatever, he'll have enough to pay them as well.
What's the fear? I understand, Susim.
Because of Mitzrayim, so Kesef is up. Because then he's going to think that he's great. He's going to think that I will look. Yeah. Basically, that's what it is. Yeah. Hashtag Amit Loy Ladrosha, fine. So if we're saying in each of these psukim that the word loy, loyaba loy susim, ketzvazar loyaba loy, that each one of them is meant for a drosha, loyaba loy nosha, my dad should say, what are you going to do? It's a pasuk where it says you should not have for himself too many wives, the 18 that we said on Amud Aleph. What does loy over there mean? The answer is lamor to head yotis. That comes to teach us that this din does not apply to head yotis. Again, when it comes to gold and silver, and when it comes to horses, there's no reason to be mamayis of yotis. We know that they're taka mamua, but there's no reason, the dinim, the reasons that Tzara gives, that you're going to return the people to Mitzrayim, or that you're going to think that you're invincible or whatever, are not going to apply to a commoner anyway. But why? You would think maybe lo yosu lavava, you don't want his heart to turn away from Amishta. Maybe we'll worry about the average person that also. No, the king is the primary thing, because like the Rambam says, leiv ha-melech leiv ko Yisrael. By a regular person can pack a board to have 18, can have more than 18 wives, give them that, let them have more than 18 wives. Mind you, we learned in Yevamos actually that it's not really a good idea. We said that the maximum that a man should have is four wives. That way, if we assume that the oina is once a week, which is, for example, Tamir Chachamim, is like that, then at least each one of them will get an oina once a month. So that'd be prorated like that.
They wouldn't.
Okay, talking about a lot of horses, Rabbi Huda pointed out a contradiction between Sukkim. Siv, one pasuk in Malachim describes Shlomo's amount of horses. It says, "Vayhila Shlomo aboim elof urbis susim lamerfakto." It says that Shlomo had 40,000 stables of horses for his chariot. And another pasuk says in Divrei Yomim, "Vayhila Shlomo abas alofim urbis susim." And in Divrei Yomim, it reduces it down to 4,000. So what was it? Was it 4,000 or 40,000 stables? What it means is Haketa. If there were 40,000 stables, it's dablois is basically the same word as stables in English. Then it means each of those stables had 4,000 individual stalls for the horses. And if the other way around, if there were 4,000 big buildings that were the stables, and each one had 40,000 stalls. Either way, it comes out the same thing: 4,000 times 40,000. But we don't know was it 4,000 buildings, each one with 40,000 stalls, or the other way around: 40,000 buildings, each one with 4,000 stalls. So 4,000 times 40,000 would be 16 million, I think. Yeah. I might be dropping 160 million. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Rabbi Yitzchak pointed out another contradiction between Pesukim that describe the wealth of Shlomo's kingdom. See, one pasuk says these are both in the Malachim actually. Ein kesef nechshav b'nei Shlomo l'mu'uma. One pasuk says that silver wasn't counted for anything in Shlomo's time.
There was so much gold
that silver didn't count for anything. But another pasuk says, "Vayitim Shlomo as a kesef Yerushalayim kabonim." Another pasuk though says that Shlomo made silver in Yerushalayim to be as common as stone, implying it had some value. It's not complete. No, but what does it mean? Then why? Yeah, one pasuk saying it's value, it's worthless, and the other one says it's like stone. The first one is before Shlomo married Bas Parai, when he was still fully a tzaddik. Then silver was completely worthless because of the amount of gold he had. After he married Batsara, then things started going downhill. Then silver is worth something, just not still. It was like stones, but it had something.
Why became worth?
Because once he married Batsara, then things started going downhill.
So silver became.
And so silver came to have some kind of value. In other words, he didn't have enough gold for silver to be worth. Another thing that happened when he married Batsara, famous thing, was the Shosh and not the Shlomo as Batsara. When Shlomo married Batsara, Yorad Gavriel came down, the not Konabayam, he stuck a stick into the sea, the hell of Sirta, and eventually dirt and mud and whatever gathered around it. But all of Nivna, Krach Godel Shabaroimi, and that's where the big city of Rome was eventually built on that spot. In other words, there wouldn't have been a Rome, and it's built on the Italian peninsula, which sticks out into the sea. The point the Gemara is saying is that peninsula, or at least the area on the peninsula where Rome is, didn't exist before this. So
he threw
it into the ocean, and then the dirt collected around. The point is that we're saying if it weren't for Shlomo marrying Batsara, there wouldn't have been a Rome, and there wouldn't have been the destruction eventually of the Beit Mikdash.
Wasn't marrying Batsara
He meant it for a good purpose, because he meant to bring all the nations of the world closer to the Eibishter, because like this will be related to them. But first, the Torah says you're not allowed to. First of all, the Torah says you're not allowed to marry a Mitzri until the third generation, a Mitzri Ger of the third generation. Second of all, as we talked about yesterday, a lot of these wives of his eventually went off the derech and the worshipping of Adazara, and Shlomo tolerated it, and then they had created problems. So that's But Omer Rabbi, talking about Malon is Galu Time Eitera. Why are the reasons for mitzvahs not revealed in the pasuk? Sharesh Shem Mitzrayim is Galu Time, because we see there are two mitzvahs where the Torah gives a reason. Nichshav and Gadol Olam, and the great person of the world, Shlomo Malach, no less, with Nichshav in them, and thought that these don't apply to him. Siv Lo Yagol Enoshim. Yeah, see, because you have the one pasuk says lo yavel enoshim. The pasuk says v'lo yosu b'vorek. Amar Shlomo, so Shlomo figures to himself, I'm the Arab of lo yosu. Okay, it doesn't apply to me. I can have many wives, and my heart won't be turned away from Eibishter.
Why?
He thought that the pasuk is limiting it only if the yosu lo yosu b'vorek. Then only if the yosu b'vorek. It's a condition, yeah. And
we talked about it
in Hanuman Aleph. Yeah, we had the Machlokes.
He was very smart.
Yeah, he
was not as smart
as I. He thought that he's immune to it. No, people make mistakes. And another one, Uchtiv, and then in the end, what happened? The pasuk says, Ziknat Shlomo. In the end, in Shlomo's old age, Noshav Hituas Lavave. His wife turned away his heart from the Eibishter. And Uchtiv, another one says, Loyad Veloy Susim. The pasuk says he shouldn't have too many horses, so he doesn't return the people to Mitzrayim. But Amash Shlomo and the Arab of Loyashiv, and Shlomo figured, I can have a lot of horses, I won't cause the people to go back to Mitzrayim. Uchtiv, but then the pasuk ends up saying, Vakaitim, a cover of Mitzrayim, Vashesh Vagomer, that Shlomo had a whole group of merchants over there buying and selling and dealing in horses, where a chariot would go out from Yerushalayim and cost 600 zuz, and then they'd sell such chariots to all the nations around. So, Taka, why does the Torah say give reasons for those two mitzvahs? The Marsha says, because in those cases, the reasons themselves are mitzvahs of their own. Lo yosu levave is a mitzvah of its own. Don't turn away from Eibishter. So don't return to Mitzrayim as a mitzvah of its own. But it's meant to be that in other words, you have four separate mitzvahs over there. Shlomo misunderstood it as a mitzvah and a reason. So the reason doesn't apply, then the mitzvah doesn't apply.
Is there any discussion on why he can make a mistake if he was supposed to? He was the smartest.
Even the smartest person can make mistakes, yeah. But
we know now, after he made a mistake,
exactly.
That's what Hasidus teaches.
Yeah.
But you do the mitzvahs without.
So now it's interesting you mention that, because even though the Gemara is saying over here that time and Torah are not revealed, we know that already we find in the Gemara we find reasons for mitzvahs sometimes, and among the Rishonim we find many more. That Amman writes many of them in Mor Nebuchim. The Chinuch tries to find a reason behind every mitzvah. So what's the deal? So there's a few possibilities. One of them is, I mean, first of all, some of the Mefarshim point out the Torah itself gives reasons for other mitzvahs. For example, Sukkot, Laman Yedu Derech Sechem. But the thing is, those reasons are not ones that are going to mislead you. Nobody's going to say, I don't have to sit in a sukkah because I anyway know kibas sukkah is a shatiyas b'nei Yisrael. So that kind of reason is not a problem. It's not a problem. So some of the reasons that they give for mitzvahs are that. Others are, you're, again, the idea is that you're not giving reason to say this is the only reason for the mitzvah, therefore when the reason doesn't apply, the mitzvah doesn't apply. We know ultimately, again, even if we just have to chop wood without giving a reason, we do it. We do them because they're the rotten of the Eibishter. The Eibishter wants us to try to understand them with our seichel, and therefore so that's different. So we're not, to give a reason that you're going to think the mitzvah depends on the reason, no reason, then no mitzvah, that not. So, for example, actually, the Torah disagrees with the Rambam on a point involving that. The Rambam writes, for example, that a number of the dinim that the Torah tells us, like, for example, not shaving our peis and our beards and not tattooing ourselves and a number of such mitzvahs, the Rambam says, are because the Goyish priests used to do such things. That's the Rambam puts them all in Hilchot Avodah Zarah for that reason. The Torah argues you shouldn't give reasons for them. The mitzvah is a mitzvah, regardless whether the Goyish priest did it or not. So basically, that's the argument. The Torah is figuring that the Rambam is giving a reason as if to say, and therefore, if Goyish priests don't do it, then that shouldn't be a problem. And no, that's not the verse. We don't do it because the Eibishter said so. Once you have that as a given, then you want to find a reason, you can find a reason.
What is
this one? What? This is about, here we're talking about Sparrow. Marcus Sparrow is a different thing. Marcus Sparrow came to visit him.
No.
Okay. There is, in Rashi, there's a number of places throughout Tanakh where you have parenthetical notes included in Rashi. They're not actually from Rashi. They come from later Sfarim. They were included in a printing of Nach beginning in the 1600s. But one of those actually says that he actually married her or had relations with her or whatever, and a descendant of theirs was Muhammad. In other words, as if to say, it's brought in one of these parenthetical notes that's interpolated in Rashi over there, that Shlomo actually married this Malchus Shva, the queen of Shva, who came to visit him, and their descendant, and from there came the Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, implying that he was wrong in doing that, and therefore it caused, just like we're saying over here, that Shlomo marrying Bat Parah caused Rome to come about, so also, yeah. And you have the Goyim. You can ask they had the Ethiopians have a whole tradition of their own that Shlomo married Malchus Shva and their line of kings all the way down to the Haile Selassie and whoever else. But then from them, yeah, whatever. Okay.
But in other words, Gemara sees it in terms of perspective. Once he married about the power of them, gold went to silver.
Yeah.
But I mean, he didn't have that perspective. It could be that it happened over 20 years.
It could also be, yes. And not necessarily, I mean, when we say when he married Bathsheba, I mean, that was the pasuk says that happened in the fourth year of his reign. Doesn't necessarily mean, right, it doesn't necessarily mean that it happened right away either. It could mean that maybe he only got engaged to her in that year and they got married at some later date. Maybe it's only when she started having a bad influence on him. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. But that's nice.